These days, it seems life forces us to be on all the time. But every now and then, it's important to stop and reset. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. So make sure your refrigerator is stocked with Coors Light when the Texas Longhorns are playing, or when you're watching any game. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or any team. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, perfect for a moment to unwind. For many, the perfect moment is when the work is done and the game is on. So when life forces are go, 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 take a moment to chill with a Coors Light. Have it delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Hello, Texas fans. This is the Longhorn Confidential for Thursday, November 12th. I'm Danny Davis of the Austin American Statesman. As always, I'm joined by Mike Craven. Mike, say hello to the people on this lovely Thursday as we get ready to talk about some recruiting.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
Okay, Mike. This is a big weekend for Texas recruiting fans. On Saturday, Shadow Creek linebacker Terrence Cooks, he's going to announce his decision. Texas is part of his, I guess, Final Four, if you will. Baylor, Georgia, LSU, also being considered by Terrence. Now he had a poll up on his Twitter page. He asked the fans, who should he pick? And about 1,500 people had responded. The people are heavily leaning towards Texas. Mike, which way are you leaning? Are you agreeing with the people, or are you opposition view?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take Texas. It's recruiting, so you never know. I do think Baylor is in the mix there because of the Dave Aranda thing. LSU had recruited him pretty heavily as well back when Aranda was at LSU. So I do think Baylor is in the mix more so than people have given him credit for. But I think at the end of the day, Texas has been the leader, remains the leader, and will be the school that he picks on Saturday.
So if he does pick Texas on Saturday, I don't know if he's going to do a hat ceremony or a cool edit video or however he decides to do it. If he does pick Texas, what should fans know about Terrence Cooks? We've talked about him for a while now on this podcast, but as a refresher, what kind of linebacker is he? What should fans know about him?
Yeah, when he came, so right before kind of COVID took over the country and forced the NCAA to stop visits from players to campuses and stuff, Texas had a junior day in February, and on that junior day, Terrence Cooks was told by the new staff, hey, you're our number one inside linebacker prospect. He plays outside linebacker at Shadow Creek. I think he can play both spots. Texas is in that 4-2-5. I think he could play either one of those. He's an athletic guy. He can run, kind of looks like an overgrown safety. And that's kind of the mold that Texas wants in linebackers in the Big 12, like a DeMarvion Overshown, a guy who may be a little bit too big, not quite fast enough to play safety, but has that ability to get sideline to sideline because you're going to be asked to cover and you're going to be asked to cover really quick running backs and slot guys. So a versatile linebacker who plays for a really good school at Shadow Creek. They're the defending Class 5A Division I champion. So he's played in big games. So an all-around good football player and one of the better students you're going to find in elite-level recruiting. A guy who's, planning on majoring in, like, biochemistry and stuff like that. His mom is a scientist. And so a really smart kid and somebody who has played football at a really high level in the state of Texas.
So he's got the brains to match the, to match the athletic skill. I like to hear that about a recruit. That's it says something when if you don't make it to the NFL, your backup plan is an engineering job. I think
that's good for him. There's a couple of those guys in this recruiting class. Hayden Connor as well, really high level student who already does stuff with NASA and everything. I wonder, Tom Herman, obviously an academic guy who, the Mensa joke is always put out there and stuff. But I wonder if that's something on his recruiting checklist that maybe more so than some other coaches.
You wrote last week in your dotted line column about three recruits that Texas could not afford to lose in this 2021 class. One of them obviously being Jatavion Sanders. Jonathan Brooks is part of that group. Is Terrence Cook a recruit that Texas can't afford to not get?
No, I don't know. I don't think he's, you know, and I'm really high on Terrence Cooks. I think I have him rated higher than most places do. But yeah, I don't know if a linebacker is going to be, you know, that much of a priority, you know, unless you're like a five-star can't miss kind of guy. You know, he's not a DeGabriel Floyd as a prospect. That doesn't mean he can't be a really good football player. But he's not, you know, a four-star, five-star guy. So I wouldn't label him as a can't-miss guy. But Texas needs linebacker. You know, behind Juwan Mitchell and DeMarvion Overshown, there's not much proven commodities back there. So they need to keep getting better at that position for sure.
Speaking of linebackers, Maurice Blackwell, the Arlington Martin linebacker, is also in this 2021 class. You've gotten to see Maurice twice this season. How do him and Terrence compare and contrast? And, you know, assuming Terrence commits, could they play together in, you know, 2-3 years?
Yeah, I think they would really go well together on a football field. I think it kind of like Mitchell and Overshown right now. Cook's probably more in the Juwan Mitchell phase, better at going downhill, either blitzing, you know, rushing the passer, or just pure run stopper mode. Whereas Maurice Blackwell, kind of like Overshown, more of a safety guy. I mean, I don't know if Maurice Blackwell weighs over 205 pounds. You know, he's probably 6'1", 200 pounds right now. I mean, super fast. Plays some secondary for his high school team, so one of those hybrid safety guys, even more so than Cooks does. So I think they match up well together. I would give Cooks the advantage as kind of an in-the-box linebacker. I would give Blackwell the advantage as just an overall athlete. And that's because you're not going to find many linebackers that are better athletes than Maurice Blackwell.
If Terrence Cooks does decide he'd rather be a bear or a bulldog or a tiger, does Texas have a backup plan? Is there another linebacker in this 2021 class that they may try to get, or do they just punt and say Maurice Blackwell is good enough for this class and we'll start focusing on 2022?
Yeah, I think they punt if they don't get Terrence Cooks. You know, and that could change if they really love somebody's senior film that hasn't kind of emerged on the offer list right now. But in terms of guys who are offered, not many options remaining out there. And then, you know, as we've talked about it with other positions, with the eligibility rule this year, where you're not going to lose any eligibility whether you played enough or not this season, you can punt. If you're a team, you know, in most years, you don't get your A option or your B option. You got to go fill those spots. You need 85 guys on the roster to have depth and stuff. This year, you know, you can look at your roster and go, okay, all those freshmen, all those sophomores, they're staying freshmen and sophomores. So we can, if we don't like our options that are remaining, we can wait until that next year. And that also is helped by the fact that they signed three linebackers last year with Jaden Holleby moving over to linebacker from his offense. You know, he was an offensive recruit. Now he's playing linebacker. So I think they feel pretty good about the depth there, to where if they don't get Cooks, they can just wait until the next season, maybe sign one or two more guys than they were planning to at that spot next year.
You know, we mentioned versatility with Terrence Cooks and Maurice Blackwell. How much has the linebacker position changed in regards to recruiting? We've talked about this a couple times over the past year or so, but how much has that changed over the last decade? And what I mean by that, you know, is there something when you evaluate these linebackers, is there something different you look for now than you did maybe 10 years ago? And do you think there's something different that, you know, Tom Herman and his coaching staff looks at now as opposed to, you know, 5-10 years ago?
I think it's coverage, you know, the ability to play in space. You know, we hear that word a lot when, you know, watching the NFL draft and stuff like that. You know, I 10-15 years ago, I think especially middle linebackers, you were looking for guys like Steve Edmund, big, strong, freakish athletes, dudes that would just come downhill and wreck people and could stop inside runs and could take on fullbacks and et cetera. Now that's not as important. You don't see many lead blockers. It's more of a side-to-side game. You need to be in coverage. And so I think you're looking at linebackers now as athletes more so than just erasers like they were 10 or 15 years ago because it's all about personnel groupings. The best defenses can keep their best 11 players on the field. They don't have to sub in and out based on what the offense is doing. If you have an old-school middle linebacker in there that cannot play in space and cannot cover, you're just not going to be able to play him a lot on second and third downs. And so To be versatile and to be able to play, you know, a lot of different positions and run around, I believe is something that probably wasn't as important 10 or 15 years ago.
Now, granted, there's probably not a lot of high school athletes who look exactly like DeMarvion Overshown, being since DeMarvion's been in college for 3 years now, and probably could still afford to put on a couple pounds, as Tom Herman pointed out in his post-game press conference after the West Virginia game. But considering DeMarvion's success this year, moving from that safety position to the linebacking core, is that what do you think Texas is going to be looking for, athletes like DeMarvion? Now, is that the mold of a linebacker and what the linebacker position is turning into?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, you're not going to find many guys that are 6'3", 6'4", that can run like that. So that's going to make it harder. You're probably going to find more guys who are 6 foot, 6 foot one, who can fit that bill, like Maurice Blackwell, Terrence Cooks that we were just talking about. But, you know, DeMarvion, we could pull back articles from that 2018 class. I mean, linebacker was always where he needed to be. He's just not as athletic as some of those elite safeties in modern offenses. You need to be really fast back there. He's a better fit at linebacker. And I think that's the mold that most defenses are moving to. Even in the NFL, we're kind of seeing them go with more kind of leaner, smaller linebackers who can really run and cover. I think that's just, you know, it's a react league, and you have to figure out ways to stop the offense. And right now that's with smaller, more athletic guys. And so, yeah, I think you see a lot of former safeties playing linebacker these days.
When you're out on the recruiting trail and you're looking at these defensive players, what is the hardest position on defense to evaluate? Is it, you know, someone who should be a linebacker who may be playing out of position? Is it a safety? Is it someone like a cornerback or a defensive end who chances are 99% of the time is going to be the best athlete in their matchup, just because they're not seeing that five-star receiver across the way except for maybe once a year? Is it, you know, the defensive end who probably isn't seeing that, you know, D1 left tackle except for one or two games a year? What is kind of the toughest position to evaluate? Because a lot of these players are kind of men among boys in this high school game. So I'm sure that kind of skews some things.
Yeah, if we're only talking about like Friday night film, like going to a game, it probably is corner, because they just don't get thrown at, you know, a bunch. Like, you know, you go see a big-time cornerback prospect, and unless that's a really good offense, they're just not going to pass that direction because there's just no need to. So that can be tough. You can go see a corner. I mean, I remember seeing a couple corner, like, you go see Jalen Green when he was still at Houston Heights, and he was far and away the best player on the field. I mean, you might as well have been playing 10-on-10. So you're just not going to get a lot from that. I think overall, though, it's defensive tackle. And the reason why, you kind of touched on it, you're normally not getting blocked by guys who should be even on the field with you. And you're just not sure how guys that are that big are going to transform their body. Are they going to keep the baby fat? Are they going to be able to stay athletic? Are they going to turn the fat into muscle? What is their motor like? Because a 16-year-old that's around 300 pounds is incapable of playing full speed for the entire game. And so there's just so many variables in a big guy's body like that when they're a teenager. It's hard to project, and that's why offensive line is so hard on the other side of the ball, is those big dudes, you just do not know how their body is going to transform, and that has so much to do with how good they are or they become, and you just cannot account for that in the recruiting process.
Today is the first day of the fall signing period, so this doesn't affect football because our early signing day is in December, but, you know, baseball, soccer, softball, the men's and women's basketball, you know, a lot of the Olympic sports, they're all signing on the dotted lines, and a lot of kids are realizing their dreams today. The Texas baseball team signed two players, Ace Whitehead and Cameron O'Bannon, who are really good football players in addition to obviously being talented baseball players. Ace is, of course, the quarterback at Lampasas. We've talked about him a couple times on this podcast. Cameron's a pretty talented wide receiver. I was talking to his football coach yesterday, and his coach was telling me that he was pretty convinced that Cameron could have played D1 football had, you know, he'd not have been a Texas baseball commit since he was a sophomore and pretty intent on playing baseball. But I say this to you know, kind of segue into a topic that always interests me. By all accounts, Ace and Cameron are not playing football anymore once their playoff runs are done in the upcoming weeks and months. So, you know, they'll be hanging up their football cleats. But every once in a while, you will hear about an athlete who wants to play both football and baseball, or football and track, or they want to be a two-sport athlete in college. And so I'm wondering, from all your years seeing a lot of talented athletes who can do more than one sport, you know, how tough is it to play two sports in college? Kansas State recently had a player, Peyton Williams, who was both a volleyball and basketball player, an all-conference caliber player, but that's kind of rare. John Bird did football and track last 5 years at Texas, and that was, you know, he had some struggles with that, just juggling his schedules and trying to balance two sports. So how tough is that, especially with football, where it's not just a fall sport? Football is a fall sport and a spring sport because of spring practices. How tough is that to balance those two sports?
I mean, I think it's nearly impossible for football players. I mean, you can do it, especially if you're not, you know, the A1 starter there on the football side. But like you said, football, I mean, it's a $1 billion industry for these guys, even though they're not making money doing it. But I mean, they're asked to be there 20 hours a week, every single week. That's in the fall. That's in the spring. I mean, that's even in the summer, even if it's not mandatory. I mean, it's might as well be. So you just do not have the time to do all that kind of stuff. You don't have the time to go get an extra job and make a little bit of money to take your girlfriend to a movie, much less go play a secondary sport. So I think it's got to be one of those things where you're just a freaky, freaky athlete and the coaches figure out a way for it to work. Or you're a guy where the coaches on one side or the other, or both, you know, aren't that worried about you missing a little bit of time. You know, John Burt was never a guy who, you know, I don't think the coaches were losing any sleep over missing him for the spring or something. So maybe football and track, it's more likely. Even football and some baseball could happen. But, you know, most of the football players I cover, their second sport is basketball. And football and basketball, just they overlap too much. There's just too much on your body. You need that recovery time if you're serious about football. And it's just with specialization growing and growing at the high school level, I think we're seeing it grow more and more at the college level, to where I remember as a kid, we had a couple players who played, you know, football and basketball, Julius Peppers, Charles Ward. Now you just don't hear about that anymore because it's just so hard to do, even at the prep level, much less when it gets really important at the college level.
Yeah, that's one of those key things. If there is a two-sport athlete, their coaches have to be in constant communication. There has to be a pretty decent relationship between those two coaches, because I believe the way it works, and you can correct me on this, like if you're a two-sport athlete, you're technically signed with only one sport and you're being allowed to play the other sports. So there kind of has to be some communication. You only count against one of those scholarship limits. Every once in a while, you will hear of an athlete who is a two, three-sport, multi-sport athlete in college. You know, he says, hey, you know, I have an offer to go play both sports at X university. And while that may work with some of the smaller schools, you know, like you said, it's really tough to do with the larger school. But if you hear of an athlete on the recruiting trail who says he's been offered to play both sports, how believable is that offer? Is that one of those things where, yeah, that's what you're being told, but once you get to campus, we'll see if you actually suit up for both teams?
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things where, you believe the kid that the coaches told him that, but you don't believe the coaches because, you know, I think in the back of their mind, they're like, yeah, I mean, you can come try, but you're going to give it up once you're here. Jalen Catalan, safety from Mansfield, was like that a couple cycles ago, an elite baseball player. And he had the ability to come play both sports in Texas, or he ended up signing with Arkansas. But I just don't think it's something that once he got there became realistic. We've talked about Garrett Wilson on this show. Garrett Wilson, he could have played basketball. I think every college that recruited him said, hey, if you want to play basketball, you can. We're not going to stop you from doing that. But I think once you get on campus, you start practicing, you start getting those bumps and bruises, it's a little bit different than high school football. You're going to be sore. You're going to be hurting. You need that off season to kind of recover. I think everybody by the end of that freshman year realizes, okay, this is about all I can handle right here as a body.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, football being a 24/7. So, I mean, baseball's the same way. I mean, baseball has fall practices that are very important to what they try to do. So, I mean, that'd be kind of tough for a football player who wants to also play baseball to miss that time during the fall.
Yeah, and summer league baseball.
Before we get out of here, we're going to do our weekly stop at Craven's Corner. Your weekly look at gambling runs in the paper on Thursdays, online on Wednesday on hook'em.com. Texas is off this week, so maybe some UT fans have a little bit of money hanging out that they'd like to spend. What's your favorite NCAA bet for the week?
Yeah, with this job, I've become a Big 12 expert, I feel like. I watch a lot of Big 12 football. West Virginia is only a three-point favorite there against TCU. I feel like West Virginia is a much better team than TCU. West Virginia, you know, they only scored 13 points last week against Texas, but their quarterback threw for over 300 yards. He's the second leading passer in the Big 12. They can put up some points. I just don't trust TCU at all. They didn't even, I think they had like 74 yards passing in a win against Texas Tech. It was something ridiculous like that. So give me West Virginia in college. And then on the pro level, going back to the Browns plus three over the Texans. I just don't get it. Browns minus three against the Texans. I'm sorry. You get 3 points usually for being at home. They're at home. That means that Vegas is saying that the Texans and the Browns are basically a toss-up. I think the Browns are a better football team. So we're rolling with Cleveland there at home.
Is there a sport that's just really tough to gamble on? Is it, you know, football? Is it baseball or basketball? The Masters is getting underway soon. Is it something like golf? Is there a sport that you just, no matter what, even if you were had a bunch of money stored away to just spend as much as you want, you know, you're just still not touching that sport because it's pretty much like lighting that money on fire?
This may say something about me, Danny, but I haven't found it yet. If there's a sport that I don't like to bet on or I'm too scared to bet on, I've yet to find it. I think baseball is probably the toughest, just because starting pitching dictates so much of what's happening. It's not necessarily like you're picking the Braves to beat the Astros. You're really picking a certain starting pitcher to beat another starting pitcher. But nowadays they only pitch about 4.5, 5 innings, so it's a lot of bullpen stuff. So I think baseball I'll take that back. I don't bet many baseball 9-inning games. I usually bet only the first 5.5 innings. You can bet kind of the first half of a baseball game. And since starting pitchers don't pitch as much anymore, I find myself only betting on the first half of baseball games to kind of limit the amount of pitching changes that are variabled into my gambling. God, I'm a degenerate.
Oh, with that note, let's get out of here so you can go study up on some Masters picks coming up. As always, you have your dotted line column that runs throughout the week. Talked about Terrence. You've written about Terrence Cooks this week. You've written about what are not spectacular rankings for the Big 12 football programs as far as the national perceptive goes for this 2021 class. You also wrote about three recruiting questions that Texas kind of needs to answer before this early signing day comes up in December. So what else are you working on? Where are you going this weekend? What's kind of on your plate?
Still need to figure out my topic for the dotted line tomorrow. Still kind of mulling around on that one. Going to Westlake versus Bowie on Thursday to get my first in-game live look at Texas offer Cade Klubnik. Pretty excited about that. Burger Stadium is one of my favorite stadiums in Austin, if I'm being honest. Then on Friday, going to see Terrence Cooks. You know, going to see if I can get some hints there from him the night before, maybe build some quotes for the next day if he's willing to be open and honest about it. So we'll see. Going to go catch him one time before he commits there to either Texas or Baylor.
Awesome. That is going to do it for us. Some spring cleaning before we get out of here. I am taking the rest of the month off, so the Longhorn Confidential podcast will be once a week. We won't be doing the daily format for the rest of November. But Mike will be manning the ship for these Thursday podcasts, so you can still get your recruiting fixes in and get all your topics answered that you want to talk about. So, you know, maybe if you have a topic, hit him up on Twitter at Craven Mike. I'll be watching and listening from afar. So, you know, you can hit me up at AAS Danny as well. But we do appreciate you listening and tuning in each week. If you want to shoot us a review at the Apple Store or on the Google Podcast app, we do appreciate that as well. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you down the road.
Peace.